You are listening to the
World Extreme Medicine Podcast.
Welcome back to the World Extreme Medicine Podcast with myself, Owen Walker. In this episode, we're going to be speaking with Marius Rain about publishing research in an academic journal. So what I wanted to do in the conversation is really cover why it's fundamentally important to publish work. We also wanted to look at aligning research with the aims and scopes of the journal that will publish the work. We're also going to look at the costs that might not have been considered by the authors, the peer review process, the clarity of language used in submissions, preparing manuscripts, and much more. So to do this, we have Marius Rain with us. Marius is a consultant anesthesiologist working at the pre-hospital division of the Oslo University Hospital. He's a senior lecturer at the Norwegian Air Ambulance Foundation, and he's also a professor in pre-hospital critical care at the University of Oslo Faculty of Medicine. Most importantly, Marius is the editor-in-chief of the Scandinavian Journal of Trauma, Resuscitation and Emergency Medicine, which will form the basis of our discussion today. Marius, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Owen. Thank you for having me.
Marius, I wonder if we could just start by asking sort of the fundamental question, really, why we should publish academic work in relation to expedition medicine or indeed pre-hospital care.
So expedition medicine and pre-hospital critical care would be, you know, areas of medicine that are embedded into specialties like anesthesia, critical care, surgery, and general practice. And all of these specialties are evidence-based. And I think for us, you know, to have the ambition to provide critical care without walls, we should have that ambition whether we're on an expedition or if we're on the roadside in the city. So in order for us to increase the quality of our care, we should, you know, continue that practice of evidence-based care also into expedition and pre-hospital environments. So that's why we need to publish in a peer-reviewed scientific journal.
So I wondered if we could just look at the anatomy of the journal, if possible, so the SJTREM, if you could just maybe unpack it for us, and indeed the process of handling manuscripts.
Yeah, sure. You know, so Scandinavian Journal of Trauma, Resuscitation and Emergency Medicine, it's a scientific journal. It's indexed in PubMed and several other sources as well, and has an impact factor of about 3.3 to 3.5. It varies a bit from year to year. And what happens is that you submit your paper online to the journal, and then the manuscript will go through a technical quality check, and then looking at formatting, etc. And then it will go directly to the editor-in-chief, which will be me. So every morning I receive a number of manuscripts that have come through that in a process throughout the night. And then I look at them and I check if they are, you know, within the scope of the journal, if they are at a quality that's sufficient for us to look at it further. And then you could either come into the category of reject without review, because we try to identify papers that are not suitable for the journal and advise the authors to go somewhere else as soon as possible so that we don't infer any delay in handling the manuscript. And that would be out of respect for the authors. And then I will, if they pass through that filter, then I will allocate that manuscript to any of my associate editors or myself. And when the manuscript is with the associate editor or myself, we will send it out for peer review, which we have a standardized peer review process. And then from then on, it will be looked at by two independent peer reviewers, because we operate a single blind peer review system, meaning that, you know, the reviewers are aware of the names and the affiliations of the authors. And that's basically to avoid any conflict of interest. And then the reviewer feedback will be provided to the authors in an anonymous way. And, you know, so the benefit of the single blind peer review process is that, you know, it's a traditional model of peer review that many reviewers are comfortable with, and also many of the authors are comfortable with. And it facilitates, you know, a dispassionate critique of manuscripts. And then we try to have somewhere between 2 to 5 external peer reviewers. And then the editors will obviously look at the paper and come back with a critique and a decision. So the decision will come into different categories, which will be either, you know, a direct accept, which is something that we very rarely see, especially if you look at original manuscripts, but also, you know, look at minor revisions or major revisions, or in some cases reject as well. And then if you have a revision, and then you can try to modify the manuscript, you can make a rebuttal, and then you can resubmit your revised manuscript back to the journal, and then it goes on for a few rounds. Then hopefully your manuscript will be accepted at the end.
Just so looking at that process, and like you said before, you know, the start of the process really is the author submitting a manuscript for review, indeed by yourself, and like you said, then it goes through to the peer reviewers as well. But could you maybe walk us through some of the common errors or commonest errors that you see when it comes to manuscript submission?
Yeah, sure. You know, so I think the most common error would be to submit a manuscript that is out of scope. So at the website, we have clearly stated our scope. We can talk a bit more about that later. But try to be within the scope of the journal. And then you try to, what we look at is, you know, the study methodology. And what we can say is that it should be at the highest level possible. So in some areas of medicine, you know, in pre-hospital critical care, you would expect, you know, cardiac arrests and in airway management, you would have high expectations of the study quality. So if you look at the hierarchy of evidence, we could see that, you know, you could do high quality observational studies or randomized design, interventional design on patients, not mannequins and animals. And so we would expect that. Whereas in other areas of medicine, where it's very difficult to perform a randomized trial, like, you know, major incident management, you can't randomize major incidents or mudslides. So then you would expect, you know, people to write up a good case report. A case report is at the other end of the spectrum of the hierarchy of evidence, but within major incident management, it's something that we look at of interest because, you know, there is ethical and practicality issues on making a randomized trial out of a major incident. So if you try to be as ambitious as possible when it comes to the design of your study, then you have a better chance of passing through the filters. And then also, you know, the quality of the writing, you know, it's too wordy. You write too much and it's not structured. And for non-English fluent writers, you should try to have some external help. And also, you know, I think the graphical presentation of the paper as well is very important because, you know, infographics, well-designed infographics can depict, you know, 1,000 words. And so if you have, you know, within the scope, you have high quality study design and you write it in a good way with good language and you have good graphics, it's a good start.
As you say, Marius, that, you know, there's a real skill in designing easily accessible infographics. So infographics which actually just unpack the information in an easy to consume fashion, but actually also demonstrate the sort of the breadth of research as well. But very much looking at the scope, as we said before, almost sometimes is that journals or indeed manuscripts falling at the first post, really, if it's not within the scope of the journal. And and so maybe could you speak to that, because like you said, the alignment is absolutely key, because it's not going to be published in SJ Trem if it's not really within the pre-hospital critical care or indeed the emergency medicine kind of remit. But could you maybe speak to what you're looking for in regards to the scope?
Yeah, so, you know, we look at, you know, manuscripts looking into pre-hospital and early in-hospital diagnostic and therapeutic aspects of emergency medicine and trauma, resuscitation, and that include, you know, areas which are key, like dispatch, major incident management, etiology of cardiac arrests or similar. You could have pathophysiology. Rehabilitation as well is also important. And epidemiology, prevention, education, all these different types of aspects into the pre-hospital and early in hospital management of patients. And we also look at, you know, ethical and socioeconomic aspects, which is also should be assessed for publication as well.
Marius, could you speak to some of the commonly overlooked aspects of costs associated with publishing? And also, are there any mitigations for developing context or indeed researchers wanting to submit manuscripts?
Yeah. You know, that's a major concern. You know, publishing these days and paying the article processing charge is fairly expensive. So I think it's very important for the authors to look into what the journal requires of funding for a paper. And these prices change all the time. So I just have to look into the web page, actually, or the journal to look what it is at the moment. But I think authors should try to look into that. But there's also, you know, our publishing house, which is Spring in Nature, it offers agreements that, you know, enables institutions to cover for open access publishing costs. So that was obviously be related to where you work and where you are affiliated to. But we also have some waivers, and we have discounts for articles as well. But that's a limited amount of number, and we try to use that for particular type of papers. Could be reviews, but it could also be papers coming from low-income countries. But if you want to submit a paper to our journal, and you need to have a waiver used from funding reasons, you should try to contact me personally beforehand so we can talk about that. Because if you submit your paper and it goes through peer review process and we do lots of work with it, and then your paper is accepted, and then you have difficulty funding your APC, your article processing charge, then, you know, it's suboptimal. So look into the current, you know, standards from the journal. Look into the agreement between the journal and your affiliated society. And if that doesn't cover it, then you have to contact us personally to see if we can have a waiver. Because paying this out of your own pocket, it's way too much.
Indeed. No, indeed. And like you said, getting all that work done, but then falling at that last post of financing it negates all that hard work, actually, that which has been done in the process. So It's, like you say, prudent to really pay attention to that in the initial stages, actually. But looking at requests for revisions of manuscripts based on clarity of language, Marius, could you speak to how common it is to look at or indeed critique the clarity of language within a submission?
Yeah, you know, so Mark Twain once said, you know, I didn't have time to write a short letter, so I wrote a long one. And I think that also goes for scientific manuscripts. So I think that you should think that, you know, the majority of the readers of Scandinavian Journal of Trauma Resuscitation and Emergency Medicine will be pre-hospital care providers like, you know, myself and yourself, and our attention span might not be that long, you know. So we should have short, good, high quality written papers, and by condensing the content, it forces you to be clear about what you're writing about. So that's one thing. And also, you know, if, as I mentioned earlier, if English is not your native tongue, you should probably have some expert advice. And also try to be consistent in whether you're using English or if you're using American English, because we see quite a lot of mixtures. So that would be probably two advice that we can give. But we also provide language assisting services as well, if you want to use that. So but if you wrote a manuscript, should be perfect, you know, English language is your native tongue, whereas if you have someone from Asia or Scandinavia, it's more difficult.
So looking at the sort of formatting of an article or indeed a manuscript, What are some of the key elements for compliance and indeed generic guidelines around formatting before submission?
Yeah, so I think that when you sit down and you write up your manuscript, you should look into a target journal. So we should have the author group to agree upon. So we want to use Scandinavian Journal of Trauma, Resuscitation and Emergency Medicine to be our target journal. So when you sit down and you write your protocol and you write your manuscript, you try to be compliant with the formatting requirements from the listed by the journal. Because what we see quite a bit is that people are not really loyal to that, and that creates quite a bit of difficulties, not only from us on the editorial side, but also from the technical handling side of the manuscripts. And so just look into the instruction to authors, because it's really, really clear what we expect the authors to comply with. And also what we see sometimes is that if you are rejected from another journal and you want to resubmit your paper, you should try to revise your formatting as well. So what we see is that sometimes people can have the formatting of a different journal and it's just straightly resubmitted to, you know, our journal. And it's not like, you know, we get offended by that, but it's not probably the best start. It's a bit sloppy. So that's the first impression. So if you want to avoid having sloppy and reject as your first impression, you should try to reformat it.
So you also advocate the use of a cover letter before submission. What should that cover letter contain in its content, Marius?
Yeah, so I think, you know, brevity is obviously important in the cover letter as well. And I think you should try to briefly provide the rationale for the study, because what we see is that, you know, we have quite a lot of papers being submitted to our journal and it needs to pass the so what filter. You know, so what? And the letter to editor is the cover letter, is where you provide a very short argument why this is actually relevant. And if you have any conflict of interests, to be academical or financial, you should elaborate a bit on that in the cover letter as well, but just keep it short, because what we finally evaluate anyway would be the manuscript.
So looking at the peer review process, you've already spoken about the fact that there is between 2 to 5 different peer reviewers. Could you maybe speak to the benefits of this process? You've also spoken about the single blind peer review process, but could you, is it, what's the differentiator between sort of involving 2 to 3 to 4 to 5? Is it quite often the subject matter that you'll involve more so others as well, or how is it differentiated?
Yeah, so we have a database of peer reviews and we rely on them to provide high quality work for us for free. So it's the service that they provide in which we are extremely grateful. So if I'm handling a manuscript looking into, you know, pre-hospital area management, I identify, you know, a list of topical experts on area management, and I try to have invitations spread out from different research groups so we can have different angles looking into this paper, and also try to have that from different countries, different services, different backgrounds. So I could have paramedics, I could have doctors, professors, nurses. And then, you know, I get, you know, I invite a few people and they, not all of them will accept it because they might not have the time, or they might have a conflict of interest in which I was not aware about. And then they get me the feedback, and some of them will be, you know, looking, they will almost all the time look at different things of the manuscript. So that's why we triangulate, you know, the paper by having all these peer reviews. And some papers might have like 5 or 6 peer reviews, whereas others might have less. And I think also because the group of people doing academic work within our field is not that many, so I think there is a big risk for us to have personal or financial or academical conflicts of interest. And I think that's very important for us to have a very fair robust and objective evaluation of the manuscripts. That's why we invite people. I might invite people from Asia, Australia, and to look at the paper being submitted from Denmark. So because if I have people from Norway or Sweden looking into a paper from Denmark, there is a bigger risk for us to have a conflict of interest. We try to avoid that. And then they evaluate the manuscript, and they send me their recommendations back, and then I put everything into a letter and I send it to the authors.
Fantastic. And like you said, that is a robust system whereby you have subject domain experts or specialists within their field reviewing the paper or coming back with maybe different critiques, but then aligning those critiques absolutely makes sense back to the author of the paper.
Mm. Sure.
Could you, just concerning copyright, Marius, could you speak to copyright? What researchers should be mindful of regarding aspects of the different criteria, so the ICMJE criteria, and indeed other elements? Could you maybe unpack that?
Yeah, so the ICMJE criteria would be the International Committee on Medical Journal Editors. So we are affiliated to the framework that they provide, and we comply with the guidelines that they serve. You know, that's like a framework within the journal that we work within, and then we have our own framework, which is even more narrow than that, and so that looks into review best practice and ethical standards and the conduct and reporting of research, and also pertaining to copyright. And one of the good things about having a open access journal, which is what SJTRM is, open access, meaning that, when the paper is published, so if you publish a paper, there's an article processing charge that might be paid by your institution or is being waived or being paid by your group. And then the good thing then is that the manuscript is open to everyone. So it can be read by institutions throughout the world, which is good from a solidarity perspective. And also that, the copyright on any of the open access papers in this journal is retained by the author. So you pay for it and you own it. So, but you grant, our publishing house a license to publish it and identify it as an original publisher. So, but the author might also grant a third party the right to use the article freely, as long as its integrity is maintained and its original author's citation details and publishers are identified. And all of this is written, with small letters in all the contracts and stuff that you agree upon when you sign the manuscript. I think it's very important to look into this if you have copyright issues. Many institutions, academic institutions, they have their own requirements regarding this. So I think that's one of the things that you need to have a look at.
And so, Marius, just looking at the, because it's one thing, like you said, doing all these iterative steps to get published, which is in itself a labor of love and indeed requires attention to detail. You said you have to pretty much have the right fit, pass the so what test, pass the peer review process, pass the editorial critique, come back and then potentially resubmit. But could you maybe speak to how you might recommend authors increase their publicity of their publications? Because it is one thing to get published, but it's another thing to draw attention to your research or indeed the publication once it is in SJTRM. How would you advocate that the authors sort of publicize their work once it's been accepted for publication or indeed published?
Yeah, so, within the journal, we also have a social media editor. So we will try to help the authors to promote papers, because we want to have discussions, we want to have attention paid to the manuscript being downloaded, cited. But for the authors, I think that the best thing is to write a good paper, because if you have a good and clinically relevant paper, it will distribute almost by itself because of the high quality. But you can obviously also help out by being active and promoting it in a sober way in social media. And we will also help doing that. And then one thing that we use here in Norway is journal clubs. So if you have your paper being looked at in the journal club, there will be a lot of people reading it, and they will probably look at the citations that you have in it, and you might, you know, have citations of your own work from previous work, etc. So you have interest into the content of what you write, and journal clubs is probably the best way. It might not be the easiest way because you tend to have quite a lot of hard critique coming, but it's a good way for people to have attention to your work, which is the best thing. And there is no such thing as a perfect paper. There's always items to critique and flaws to be identified.
And finally, Marius, as we come into land on the conversation, could you maybe speak to any other tips that you would recommend for authors just to smooth the process and indeed avoid lengthy delays in publication and or indeed rejection of work?
Yeah, sure. You know, I think that the most important thing would be to put a lot of work into the research protocol. So it's a bit like going on an expedition that, you know, 90% of the work for the expedition lies in the preparations. So a wise man said, you know, victory awaits him who has everything in order. Luck, people call it. Defeat is certain for him who has neglected to care to take the necessary precautions in time. And this is called bad luck. And the man saying that, it's basically a quote from Roald Amundsen, you know, Norwegian explorer. And I think that the principles that he embedded into his expeditions could also echo into publications in academia.
Listen, I think that's absolutely fantastic and a great way to finish off, because as you said, it's the old adage of, you know, failing to prepare is preparing to fail. So it really is within the preparation phase. And you said that the really just important thing I learned from that conversation, Marius, is like you said, just ensure that there is, it's the so what test, you know, so what's the product market fit in essence of the academic research? What question, fundamental question is it seeking to answer, which is going to benefit the community of practice? And indeed, and eventually, benefit patients. So that really is, there's some fundamental questions within that that you have to answer ahead of time and then distill that throughout the paper so that there is a common thread throughout the paper. But that's absolutely key. And another thing I just took from that conversation as well is, like you said, you've almost got to bear in mind, at front of mind, the audience which is reading this, you know, 90% of which will be consuming 5 or more cups of coffee day or night or lates or earlies, but also that, you know, have this constant switching, have a lot of demands on their time, need to get to important information quickly, to use that information quickly. So brevity and, as you said, conciseness of information is absolutely key. And I think you just echoing that is absolutely superb, because it really resonates with me. But Marius, thank you for your time today. I really do appreciate your reflections. They're absolutely insightful, and so thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the episode. Please feel free to rate, review and subscribe on whichever platform you're listening to. Please also head over to the World Extreme Medicine website, where you can find more engaging content on extreme medicine webinars and indeed the collection of courses from our global network, including humanitarian, disaster relief, expedition, space, military, tactical and performance medicine. Thanks again.